Good evening to our listeners all over the world. This is John Campbell welcoming you to Miracle Hour on bbsradio.com. And firstly, folks, I need to apologize for the little delay in starting this evening, which was just technical glitches. Nothing at all to do with the radio station, by the way. There was a mix-up there with numbers. And so I apologize to all you listeners who've been waiting. Some of those things happen, you know, modern technology, and we've got calls going in. I'm actually doing a show from England this evening, and my guest is going to be coming in from Malakara in India, in southern India, in Kerala. So I wanted to, first of all, just give a little bit of background about our guest tonight, not about in particular. His name is Law Watkins, but how I came to meet him and be a little bit involved in the KPM Institute and their organization. I started to have a real stirring of feeling that there must be a better way than this with regard to our education of our children, our young children, some years ago. And it's interesting that that's exactly the words that were used by Helen Schutman and Bill Thetford, which eventually led, of course, to this amazing work, A Course in Miracles. They said there must be a better way to interact with each other in the world, and that's what came out of it. And I asked that question after observing my own education and looking at that in a deeper way and understanding, you know, the teachers who inspired me. And I really went back, and I actually had a social occasion with four of them. Just out of the blue, I had this real desire to connect with these guys 35 years after I'd left school. And I think I may have mentioned before, I asked the question, you know, what made me choose these guys out of a staff of about, you know, 40, 50 teachers? And, of course, the answer was that they were all fun, that I had fun and joy. And then, of course, I realized that those four subjects were my subjects that I excelled in. And so it didn't take a lot for me to put together the correlation between having fun and learning, that you could do both. And as always happens, that I've found anyways, when we start to ask, you know, we get the answers. And I started to get a real desire to explore other ways of educating that I felt were more appropriate. And I was led over a period of time, quite some time later, to an American lady who I met at a training in England called Mary Tomlin. And she started to talk about a school that she'd come in contact with and was involved in India. And immediately I knew that this was, I had to see this, I had to experience it. Just, she talked about the thing that really stuck in my mind at the time, was she talked about how the children were so alive, and there was a light coming from their eyes, and they were full of fun and joy. And I mean, it's not always what we experience in the traditional education system. And I'm certainly not here to judge or criticize anybody or any system. But it is a different experience. And when she spoke about this, I became really alive, and I wanted to experience it. And I went down first to America, to Texas, to Austin, and I experienced the first school to start up outside of India in the United States. And I was completely amazed, and everything that Mary had told me about the kids, I saw that in these children in Texas. And it had a profound, profound effect on me. It caused me to, a lot of emotions came up, and it reminded me of the saying in the Course that says, you know, in the presence of love, love brings anything unlike itself to the surface in order to be healed. And when I was around these children, there's no question I was in the presence of real, pure love. And it brought up a lot of feelings. And I then decided to go down and visit the school in India, which I did. And I was similarly amazed at what I saw down there. You know, it's very hard to describe, to see children having that level of joy and fun and learning incredibly well at the same time. So it was something that had a deep and profound effect on me, and I have spread the word, if you like, albeit unofficially. Everywhere I go, I talk about KPM and the school and the approach, and it's something which is very close and dear to my heart. And as you'll know, those of you who listened to the show last week, I was actually in Cyprus, and an amazing thing happened, which I will share with you, because I think I was getting messages to reconnect, because I hadn't been in contact with school for a while. And I took four car journeys all the time I was over in Cyprus, only four. Three were cab rides, and the other was a friend who actually happened to be a teacher, and shared his disillusionment at the teaching approach that he was kind of in. And every time I got in these four different cars, the car in front, and it was a different car every time, of course, the registration plate was KPM, which is initials of his teaching approach. So I figured that was a message there to reconnect. So it's a great pleasure to do so tonight and to invite on the show Mr. Law Watkins, and he's going to come on now and talk to us. And he's in Malakara, India. So welcome to Miracle Hour, Law, and it's great to have you. And thank you so much, because I know that it's a very late hour over there. What time is it? What time do you have there, Law?
It's about 12:40 or so a.m. on Wednesday. I think we're probably 3.5 hours ahead of you, 4.5 hours ahead of you, and 12 and a half ahead of
California. And it's great
California.
To thank you for coming on the show. And can you hear us okay down there?
It's actually a little bit hard to hear your voice. I don't know how you're hearing me or how the station is hearing us, but I'm sure all is well at the station end.
Yeah,
thank
well,
you very
you're
much
coming
for
over
me on,
pretty loud and pretty clear.
Oh, that's good.
So, Law, first of all, I wonder if you wouldn't mind sharing with our viewers a little bit about your background, you know, where you come from, in other words, and you know, what's your sort of, you know, your own educational life was like, and what your work history was, you know, when you went, and eventually, of course, leading up to how you first came upon the KPM approach yourself in the school in India, and then we can maybe talk a little bit more specifically about the school, but a little bit about how you came to find this amazing institution.
Certainly. I think education has really been a major theme in my life. I would count myself in that large class of people who think of ourselves as educationally damaged. And in the course of my own education, I really wanted to find something better, as you yourself said a few minutes ago. And really didn't have any particular model to turn to. When I finished my own education, I turned to teaching, and that's probably the true sign of the educationally damaged person. What I wanted to do, however, was to begin to work in the classroom on an environment in which people in the class could examine things in their own way and raise questions and learn to find the answers for themselves. Some of the things that I had not always had or really had in a continuing and strong way. And at some point after this, I found the KPM approach being practiced here in Malakara. I was deeply drawn to it from the very first. I'd heard heard the founder of the approach speak of education and saw the school begun in which the approach was first practiced, and found in it the kind of integral approach that was so missing in everything that I had seen or had until then. And I think that integral quality is what was really key for me. So that's the basic track, I would say, that took me to it.
Okay. And could you give us a little bit of a time frame on that law? I mean, when given a year, when did you come across the approach?
Yes, this was the school was founded in 1987, and that is Sri Ramananda Memorial School.
1987? Was that 1987 law?
Yes, 1987. And
okay.
That followed 2 years after the founding of Atma Vidya Educational Foundation, which is the repository, so to speak, of the approach, the foundation that implemented and also is responsible for its promulgation.
Okay. And how did, I mean, well, first of all, what are the initials stand for? If you could tell our listeners a little bit about how the name came about and who was the founder, in fact.
Yes, the founder was Sri K. Padmanabha Menon, and it's from his name that the initials of the approach are taken, and also of KPM Institute, which is located in Austin, Texas, where, as you said, you first came upon the approach. The founder was a sage and great teacher who established this as a real benefit to everyone who comes across it.
And how did it actually take form? I mean, did he have children of his own, and did that start as a small group of people, and then who got involved to develop?
Yes, it was begun by a small group of teachers who were basically given the approach to put into practice, and a very small group originally of students, I think seven or so in number at the very, very beginning. And gradually, year by year, the school was grown, a standard or a grade at a time, until its completion in the year 2000. And so it's been, that was its first graduating class, and so now we've been able to see the results, not only in terms of the first graduates, but these students who have gone on through university and now are employed in various fields in India.
Mm-hmm. And when you first started, the physicality of the school, did you take over an existing school buildings, or did you even start from scratch, or how did that come about?
It was really started from scratch. There wasn't a school building. It was built. The original building was designed purposefully for this, with the idea that the learning environment is really of crucial importance, and the environment has to be beautiful and dignified and inspiring in its own right, and resources that are similarly conducive to exploration and discovery.
Yeah. And what would you, you know, could you explain to our listeners the basic premise of the approach? You know, what is the basic premise and how does it differ, would you say, from, like the way you put it, the educational damaging that most of us have had in our education?
Yes, I think that there are several key principles, and one that I might start with is the establishing of a relationship of trust between teacher and student. This
right,
is just
right.
Fundamental to the approach, and it actually merits a little bit of background and discussion, if I may embark on that for a moment.
Yes, please do. We'd love to hear.
I think it's perhaps also well to understand it in terms of another idea of unconditional valuing. This is, I think, the real core of how the child is approached. And the term is one that has a certain kind of danger to it, I think, because it can be, it might be overused or it might be understood in terms that are not entirely resonant with the way it is used in the approach. Basically, it means what it says, a valuing of the child no matter what. And that is completely independent of the behavior of the child.
Right.
I mean, very oftentimes, you know, we see unwanted behavior, and the way in which a child is approached is often modified according to that behavior. And this is something that is just central here, that it is the child who is valued because of what he is. The mere fact of his existence is enough for that deep acknowledgement of his presence. And there is nothing that comes in the way of a kind of judgment of the external, so to speak. And this is something that really goes in deep. It's, I think, something that makes possible the connection at a level which is not one of the sort of qualities or characteristics of the child. I was thinking just in terms of my own childhood in this regard, and I remember my mother, who was a remarkable woman in many respects. Parenting was not actually one of those respects. And my mother at several points said to me how wonderful she thought I was. And I always remember being uncomfortable by this, made uncomfortable. There was something that, you know, that made me uneasy about this. And I think that what it was that I recognized even as a child was that if she could say this, then the question arose, was her love for me because I was wonderful, or was it there for me no matter what? Was it there for me just because of what I was?
Yeah.
And I think it's a very real kind of question. I mean, one of my colleagues commented the other day that it's so easy to misunderstand unconditional valuing, because you might think that because you value a child enormously and provide everything that you can think of, that you're unconditionally valuing the child. And yet, the mere fact that you're somehow connecting the value with the providing of all the resources that you can means that you're conditioning that value. I think once, years ago, I came across the title of a book on a shelf, which was Punishing with Rewards. And I never read the book, but I thought that the title, Punishing with Rewards, yes. And I never read the book, but I thought the title itself just spoke volumes. There's the sense that if you're giving rewards, that means you're really giving the attention to what you think is meritorious in the child. There's a kind of assessment or judgment going on.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. the reverse then is implicit. That
is implicit.
The child
yeah.
is. I'm sorry?
No, I say I understand. The reverse is implicit. Is that what you said?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That the child becomes more or less dependent upon the flow of rewards in order to feel valued. And what happens if the rewards aren't there? I mean, again,
yeah.
there's that sense that something is lacking. And I remember too that. I mean, there are some feelings and senses of childhood that I still have very strongly. I'm 63 years old now, but I don't feel very very far removed from my childhood in some respects. But do you remember as a child that feeling of boundlessness?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I always thought that was amazing. And I still remember that sense if I received praise from anyone, that somehow I was being brought down from that boundlessness. You know, that I was being somehow assessed. that some quality, some external, really, was being accentuated. And
yeah.
I think that what is so key about this whole idea of the child being valued really no matter what is that it goes directly to that far deeper layer. And it strengthens that, and it does something that I think is hard to get at in any other way, and that is a building of real confidence. I know that you're you have an interest not only in education and the environment, number of other things, but also in business and just in the shall we say, the right conduct of business. We had a student from the school here, he must have graduated probably 6 or 7 years ago, actually, because he finished a 4-year course of study at one of India's highly regarded technical institutes, and then went on into a career. And when he recently wrote a letter back to one of the teachers of the school, and like many of the students who've graduated, he maintains a close contact here, precisely because of this kind of relationship that develops between teacher and student at this school. And he spoke of his experiences in the business world that he was then entering. And one of the things that he said, he described his job interview, in the course of which his prospective employer asked him what it, whether he could handle a certain area of the firm's business. And he replied perfectly candidly that he had no experience in that, no training in it, but he was confident that he could learn it and master it in very short order and be in a position to work in that area. And the employer, of course, had not heard such an answer in his experience. It was always, oh, yes, I can do that. He very much appreciated
it. I can relate to that one, Lord.
I'm sorry? And he appreciated this candor, the manner in which it was said, and the confidence that the young man was showing, and hired him, of course. Later on, this same graduate was moving very quickly up in terms of management positions, and the employer
told him,
I can get all the talent I want in India's technical institutions, but what I can't find is somebody who can work well with people.
And this is really what he got from the school now.
Yes, well, he attributed this to the school, and he spoke of confidence as being just absolutely the foundation for success in life.
Yeah. And when the students, when they first come to the school, Is it something which they readily assimilate, this difficult, it's such a different approach. I mean, my experience is that even when you talk to traditional teachers about this type of thing, and they show them the DVD, which I have done, you know, there's almost a disbelief going on, and I wonder whether there's some work that you do at the school with the parents, because one of the things I've found is that you've got to have this congruence between what's going on at school and what's going on at home in order that this child doesn't feel confused.
Yes, that's entirely right, and a really important point. I think one of the things that is done here is that the real entrance qualification is simply the willingness of the parents to understand the approach and to be in harmony with it. Otherwise, there isn't any sort of entrance qualification. And
that's wonderful.
And then follow-up work is done along the lines you talk of, so that the parents are really kept informed and in accord with what they see happening. And it often is far from our experience. Even when we're totally sympathetic to it, it's far from the experience that we had in school ourselves. So it's easy to see that parents who have come and come up in a totally different kind of school environment themselves wouldn't understand always what they see happening.
And I understand that, you know, when somebody has not experienced this, they've had a very different approach. It's almost like it doesn't fit in their internal map of the world, of the educational world, and it can create a lot of fear and confusion. So I guess it's a major part of your work, I would imagine, is you know, encouraging and making sure that the parents do take on board. And how do you go about that, Laura? How does the school go about introducing the parents to the approach and getting them to understanding at an experiential level? How do they do that?
Basically through workshops that present the approach repeatedly in varying ways. Also, they have parent coordinators that are given that role specifically and relate each of the campuses, that is to say the lower primary, for example, the upper primary, relate to the parents of children on those campuses. And a lot of attention is given to the parental understanding and their attitudes towards what's happening in the school.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell our listeners a little bit about the area which I have found people are most intrigued by, this concept where there's no coercion of the children to go down any particular route? You know, it's always child-led, if you like. Can you, you know, I don't know if I've got that correct, but maybe you could much clearer explain that concept, how that's actually done with the teacher-child relationship.
Basically the children do select their own activities, and this starts on the very first day. I mean, as a kindergarten child enters, there's no prescribed activity, but the child can make the choices. And this is something really very basic to this kind of education, that always you're making the choices for yourself. You're seeing what there is available. You're pursuing your own interests, expressing your own interests, and teachers are very much there as resources, guiding the child, making sure that the in a sense the world is opening up in front of them. It's also the case to go back to the relationship again. The relationship is very important, and perhaps I could get just sort of back up a minute and go into it for a moment, because it does circle around to the question that you just asked about the kind of child, should we say, child-driven quality of the education. One of the things about the relationship that strikes me as very important is that it is, as is the case with the unconditional valuing, it is not a superficial matter of teachers who like certain students build a relationship with those students. It really goes to the heart of the matter, to the to to the individual, all the teachers are there for all the students. And it's one of the things that I remember when I was a trainee and volunteer that just really struck me as outstanding about the school.
That's a massive point to make, Lord, because as you were talking there, I couldn't help it, but my mind immediately went back to a memory that flashed up with me where certain students were certainly treated differently, you know, especially if they had sporting prowess or particularly this. And I, as a student that was not terribly, at that level of learning at the time, although I realize now that I had other qualities, but at that time I felt incredibly different from the ones that were chosen. There was always a feeling of, it's that competitiveness which is ingrained at a very young age in the traditional system, which I think is the thing that can be so difficult, which of course is totally absent in your approach, isn't it?
Yes, and there can be, there is competition on the playing field. That's, going to be inevitable. But it seems also that in this, and partly through the relationship building itself, there's a much more collaborative kind of feeling about it. So that it takes away the kind of emphasis that you and I experienced in school of having certain qualities prized and certain students prized as a result of that and so forth. Here there's the feeling really that the teachers are there for every student.
Something came to me immediately that I think that because of that, the other thing that I observed in my brief encounter with the approach was how also the students are there for each other, and I think that's because of the modelling from the teachers. Would you agree with that?
Oh, entirely. Yes, I think that's an essential point, and modelling is in so many ways. The answer to what in other forms we find taking shape is kind of the imposition of behavior. It's so much better and easier to be led to it.
Sorry, can you say that again, Mark?
It's so much better and easier to be. Shown the behavior through modeling and not have it sort of imposed on us by some form of edict.
Absolutely. I mean, this is that old adage I love, children won't do what you tell them, they'll do what you do. And I think there's a lot of wisdom in that,
Yes.
So now that the school has been running in India for 20 years now, I guess, have you had a lot of interest from, let's say, traditional educational establishments in the West? I'm interested to know that. Could you let our listeners know about that?
There has been interest in terms. I think you're aware of the study done by Dr. Gary Borich at the University of Texas and the Education Psychology Department. And colleagues and students there have certainly been interested. I think that there has been a similar kind of interest in Europe, where various people have been active in making contact with specialists in various fields who have been keenly interested in what happens in the school and willing to share their own methods and approaches. So there's been a considerable amount of interest in it and interaction in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And what about resource information, Law? Because I'm conscious that, my goodness, it's the time has flown by. You know, it's amazing. You know, when it's such an interesting evening, we're already nearly up to our hour here. So before we wrap up, I'd like you to tell our listeners where they can get resource information. You know, are there any books they can read? Do they have a website? Do you have a website they can visit? Do you have email? Because I'm sure a lot of people would be interested to go deeper and learn a bit more. So can you give that information out?
Yes, I'd be happy to. For the approach itself, kpmapproach.org. And
okay, that's
for
the website.
The school, kpmapproach.org, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's the website, is it? www.kpmapproach.org?
Yes, that's right. That's the website. And the website for the Austin School, which U.S. listeners may be interested in, is samschool.org. And again, www.
Okay, so... folks, those of you in the States, if you'd like to get more information about this amazing approach, you can go to visit www.samschool.org. And the school in India, or the approach generally, is www.kpmapproach.org. And you can get a lot of information there, a lot of resources. And I guess that on those websites would be email addresses that they can use if they would like to contact anybody from the organization. Would that be right?
Yes. For one way, email-wise, is info@ KPM Institute.
All right, so info@kpmapproach, or just KPM?
No, this would be Institute. This is the Institute in Austin. info@kpminstitute.org. That would be the email address.
All right, okay. So info@kpminstitute.org for any communication with the Institute in Austin. And what are the names of the publications, Law, that have come out about the approach?
One of the key ones is Gary Borges' study, as I mentioned, which is called Vital Impressions.
Vital Impressions by Dr. Gary Borges?
Yes.
And where can that be purchased?
It can be purchased in bookstores. It can also be purchased through the SAM School website.
Okay. Good.
There'll be information there.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great, Law, and we are just coming up to time now, so I'd like to thank you for coming on. I know it's very, very late over there in India, and thank you once again for giving us your time and your wisdom and coming on our program tonight, and I wish you and all the people down there every success in growing this approach and its awareness around the world. And listeners, if you want to contact anybody, do visit the website, and you've got the email addresses there. So thank you, Law, and have a great sleep.
Thank you so much, John.
I look forward to seeing you soon.
Good. Thanks so much. Be in touch.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye. Thank you, Law. Bye-bye.